House, please come to order. Will the members please register their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the quorum?
38 present, 2 absent.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous I'll ask unanimous consent that absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Our chaplain today is Father Trubkowski, the Cathedral of the Nativity Catholic Church. Would the House please rise for prayer? Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to prayer be spread on the journal.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Clerk, please note the presence of Representatives Gardner and Greening in the chambers. Will the clerk please certify us to the correctness of the Daily Journal?
As Chief Clerk, I certify us to the correctness of the Journal for the 128th day and House Supplement Number 65.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body approve the Journal as certified by the Chief Clerk for the 128th day and for House Supplement Number 65.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Brings us down to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction to the chambers? If not, are there any messages from the Governor?
Mr. Speaker, I have signed the following bill and am transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 77, Procedures for Executing Anatomical Gifts, Chapter 38, SLA 1977. Signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any messages from the Senate?
The Senate has passed the following and they are returned. Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 403, Indemnification of Juneau Property Values Due to Capital Relocation Initiative, House Bill Number 510, Marine Pilots Effective Date. These bills have been sent to enrolling. Excuse me. The Senate has concurred in the House Amendment to Senate Bill Number 176, thus adopting House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 176, Powers and Organization to Cope with Natural and Man-Made Disasters with an Effective Date. The President has given powers of free conference to the Conference Committee considering Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 204 amended, Children's Laws and Related Judicial Proceedings, and Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 204 amended Senate. The free conference committee members are Senator Sumner, Chairman, Senator Willis, Senator Hackney. The message of May 10 inadvertently listed the third member of the conference committee as Senator Bradley and should have read Senator Hackney. Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed House Bill Number 341, Liability of Health Care Providers, with the following amendments. This one's quite long and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. And so House Bill Number 341, amended Senate, is transmitted herewith for consideration. The Senate has adopted the Conference Committee Report on Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 342, Management of the Coastal Resources of the State with an Effective Date, and Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 342 amended, thus adopting Conference CS for Senate CS for CS for House Bill Number 342, Management of the Coastal Resources of the State with an Effective Date. The President has given powers of free conference to the Conference Committee, considering Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 423 amended Senate, Destruction of Oil and Gas Facilities, and Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 423. The free conference committee members are Senator Huber, Chairman, Senator Bradley, Senator Rohde. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 460, a special appropriation to the Lake Peninsula Regional Educational Attendance Area for construction of additional school space for the village of Kahanak, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee reported back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurring by Chatterton, Cotton, Phillips, Bennett, Parr. Signing due pass, Nackack, Buckholt, and Byrne. House Bill 460 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 490, corrective amendments in the Alaska statutes as recommended by the reviser of statutes, under consideration. Three of the members of the committee recommend it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 490 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Vice Chairman, concurring by Brown, Carpenter, and Eliason. Signing no recommendation, Miles. House Bill 490 has no further referral. The Special Committee on Telecommunications has had House Bill 527 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee reports that it recommend that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Brown, Chairman, concurring by Bradley, Akers, and Brown. Having no recommendation, Phillips. There is a letter of intent attached. House Bill 527 has a further referral to finance. I have no further reports of standing committees, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of resolutions?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference to House Bill.
House Bill number 539 by Lathine, Hayes, and Meekins, an act establishing renewable resources development incentives and tax credits and repealing the Alaska Industrial Incentive Act and the Alaska Industrial Tax Credit Act.
Referred to Resources and Finance.
And about, I think the last will play a very important part in, I certainly support the resolution.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I probably overlooked it, but I would hope, and it doesn't see it there, and I hope the committee will also consider conservation of energy as well as development.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Ready for the question? Have a roll call vote. The question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution Number 67 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
39 yeas, 1 nay.
So House Concurrent Resolution Number 67 has passed the House. Will clerk please read the next item on the daily calendar?
House Bill Number 455 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to compensation for state employees and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 455 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Duncan, Meekins, Guy, Schaefer, and Swanson. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that House Bill 455 be considered engrossed and ask third reading placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Clerk, please read House Bill 455, third reading.
House Bill Number 455 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to compensation for state employees and providing for an effective date.
House Bill 455 is before the House in third reading. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill Number 455 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Will the clerk please announce the final total?
40 yeas, no nays.
So House Bill Number 455 has passed the House. The bill does carry an effective date section.
Speaker,
Representative Miller?
I'll ask unanimous consent that the roll call on House Bill 455 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, the effective date clause is adopted on House Bill Number 455. Clerk, please read the next item on the daily calendar.
Senate Bill Number 30, amended by Orsini, an act relating to the civil liability of parents or legal guardians for the destruction of property by minors. The Committee on Judiciary has had Senate Bill 30 amended under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 30 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, concurred in by Gardner, Miles, Dankworth, Eliason, and Brown. Having no recommendation, read. The Committee on Rules has had Senate Bill 30 amended under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 30 rules and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Cotton, Buchholz, Parr, and Nackack. Signing do not pass unless amended, Kelly. Having no recommendation, Urien. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker. Representative Miller. Representative Brown.
We have a very short at ease, please.
House, please stand at ease. Could we divide the question? I think that withdraw the motion. It's a separate question.
Asking unanimous consent to withdraw the previous motion.
Is there objection? There's no objection. The motion's withdrawn. Representative Miller?
Try this again, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask unanimous consent that the Rules Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
There's objection to the motion. Representative Anderson. House, please stand at ease. There is objection to the adoption of the committee substitute. Is there further discussion? Representative Hurion.
Mr. Speaker, it appears to me that we're in violation of the 170 rule by adding the new language that's seen in the Rules Committee substitute, which relates to warranties expressed or implied in the first section, which relates to civil liabilities, and they're not in the same section of our statutes. It appears to me that we'd be better off going to the Judiciary Committee.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, both of these do relate to civil liability, which is the title of the bill. Only question is, and really is, who is liable in such a case, a seller of some goods or the parents of a kid who did some vandalism?
Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, I would emphasize, too, Mr. Speaker, that there's absolutely no requirement under the one subject rule that the subjects be dealt with in the same titles. No requirement of that kind at all.
Is there further discussion? Representative Cotton?
Mr. Speaker, I guess I assume there's still an objection to the adoption of the Rules Committee substitute. And I'll just make a couple of points of information here. The bill has had quite an interesting history. What we've got now in front of us, though, is the original Senate bill as we received it, and a House bill that we've tacked on in Rules Committee as we sent it to the other body. So we actually do have two bills here. I feel they're on the same subject, and I assume that that's been the ruling of the chair, unless I hear otherwise. We had the bill on the calendar last week, and there were some problems with it, and we've made an effort to facilitate everybody's concerns, and I think that it's a clean bill here. The bill down below did pass the House. This isn't the first time we've done this with House bills. We've done it to facilitate other members who have been having problems receiving the attention that's deserved on their legislation.
Is there further discussion? Ready for the question? The question is, shall the Rules Committee substitute be adopted for Senate Bill 30 in lieu of the original bill? Roll call vote has been requested. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll?
Seven.
Representative Duncan?
I'd like to express my deep appreciation to Representative Urien for his help, but that member of the body doesn't want to be accommodated at this time.
Representative Duncan.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, I'm not in the minority yet. Mr. Gibson, hopefully that won't happen. I want to see that bill become law, too, and I'll, after the session, you and I can go down to the other end of the hall and talk with the committee chairman and be assured that it will get some action. I understand what you're trying to do, and you're playing a little game, and I appreciate that. I like to play games, too. I have all intents and purposes of getting that bill enacted. I'm just as anxious as you are. I am very hopeful that the Senate will move it. If they don't move it, then we can come back, and I'm sure there will be other bills later on that we can do some tagging on to.
Representative Urien?
Are you really speaking against your bill?
Speaker. Mr. Duncan?
No, I'm speaking against your motion.
Is there further discussion? Ready for the question? Roll call vote's been requested. The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
17 yeas, 22 nays, one excused.
So amendment number one has not been adopted. Is the clerk of further amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 30 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I understand a motion is...
No objection. The motion is withdrawn.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body to stand in recess for 10 minutes.
Hearing no objection, House will stand in recess for 10 minutes. House, please come back to order. Before the recess, we had under consideration House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 30 in second reading. Is the clerk have further amendments to the committee substitute?
Amendment number two by Mr. Urien. Page one, lines 18 through 25. Delete all of section two.
Representative Urien.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There's objection. Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I do this mainly, frankly, that was the intent of the original objection to the Rules Committee substitute, but there are some members here that would like to be recorded as voting against the particular section of the bill, and this amendment will provide them that opportunity.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, the section which is proposed to be deleted was House Bill 108. It passed this House on February the 25th by a 25-11 vote and was sent to the Senate. The problem that arose in the Senate was that I'm sorry for mentioning the other body, but I have to in this context, that the bill was revised so drastically, I would have trouble voting for it myself. I think that's the reason it was defeated on a 9-10 vote. I don't, to say those members, the members of this body did approve this bill on February 25th.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to have somebody explain to me this section that third-party beneficiaries. Seller's warranty, whether expressed or implied, extends to any person who may reasonably be expected to use, consume. Is that what we're saying?
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, if you'll notice, the bill doesn't change the existing law in that regard. All the bill does is to do a couple of things. First, under the existing law, you can recover only for personal injury. You cannot recover for any property damage. And so a warranted product which destroyed some of your property, you wouldn't be able to recover for. The second thing, Mr. Speaker, is that the existing law covers only the family of the buyer or a guest in the house. It does not cover anybody else. You had, I think the example I gave on the floor before was that if you had a hair dryer, let's say, which was being used by somebody, perhaps a lady who takes a hair dryer to the office and one of her co-workers uses it and is injured, be no recovery at present. But it does not have anything at all to do with what Mr. Freeman is talking about. That's covered by existing law and is not changed in any way.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I spoke against this when it came before us several months ago as House Bill 108, and I want to speak against it again. Speaking in part to what Representative Parr and Representative Freeman were talking about, this extends the scope of product liability to such an extent that if you wanted to carry it to its logical extremity, a burglar could sprain his thumb on my Slage deadbolt on my door and there would be a case for liability. It open-ends the warranty process to such an extent that a claim can be made on almost anything. I want, though, rather than deal in the ridiculous extremes to which this amendment would carry product liability, I want to speak to the concept of expanding product liability. It's what I call a reverse consumerism. The idea in product liability is that the manufacturer or the merchant of product has to make it safe for the consumer. But in the past half dozen years, product liability has been carried to such an extreme in the courts that we have a reverse effect on the consumer. I'll point out several areas in which this happens. A number of manufacturers are no longer interested in developing new product lines because of the effect of product liability. There was in developing new lines, the cost of the product is climbing greatly to cover the cost of insurance for product liability. To point out how far this has gotten out of hand and how much farther it's likely to go, there was a case decided fairly recently in which the product was deemed inferior because the manufacturer had marketed a new and improved model. The implication being that the new and improved model left the previous one, by implication, inferior. I don't think that we should push the concept of product liability beyond reasonable bounds, and this amendment, of course, does push it beyond reasonable bounds. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, since other members have reiterated what they said on the floor, and we consider this before, I'd like to remind the members of something I said and expand upon it. That is that this is not some super radical suggestion made by somebody who represents just one particular interest. This is one of the two or three suggested alternative sections to this particular bill. Now, all of these provisions under Title 45 in this particular area are part of what's called the Uniform Commercial Code, which was passed by the Alaska State Legislature in 1962. Alaska was the fifth American jurisdiction to pass it, but since that time, it has become the law of virtually every American jurisdiction, including American Samoa and the District of Columbia, except for one southern state, and I forget which one that is. Mr. Speaker, the provisions of the Uniform Commercial Code are based upon years of work by the Uniform Law Commissioners, who are hardly a bunch of bomb-throwing radicals. Mr. Speaker, they are lawyers and three-piece suits and judges, people representing industry and people of that sort. Mr. Speaker, over these many years and the many different drafts that have been suggested by the Uniform Law Commissioners, there are included two or three alternative sections. Our current law is one of those. The proposed bill addresses one of the others. And it is, in fact, the law of several of the other states. And it is considered by the Uniform Law Commissioners to be consistent enough with the uniform, with the policy behind having uniform acts regarding transactions, in order to be included as an alternative. So this is no big piece of radical flag waving consumerism by any means. It's a rather conservative provision offered by a very old organization.
Would the clerk please reread Amendment Number 2 for the benefit of those persons who have come into the chamber since the amendment was first read.
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Urien. Page 1, lines 18 through 25. Delete all of section 2.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I guess I really wanted to say primarily that if Mr. Carpenter considers that the burglar is a person who may reasonably be expected to use the door bolt in his house, then the burglar would be covered.
Representative Carpenter.
Well, I do expect it's reasonable for the burglar to use the deadbolt in my house.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question I probably know who should be addressed to, but the new language, Mr. Parr says the language, the underlying language is new, so forth. Unless something, I'm reading this wrong, something's wrong here. If you read the old language, in that case, the seller's warranty, whether expressed or implied, extends to a natural person is in the family or household. Is there one word too many underlined there, Mr. Parr? That, I think, would be my question.
Mr. Parr?
Mr. Speaker, I'm not quite sure what the question is, but the new wording is any person who may reasonably be expected to use, consume, or be affected by the goods. A natural has been taken out. Of course, this would mean, as one point I didn't address earlier, that a corporation is not a natural person, but it is a person. So if a corporation were injured by this warranty, they could collect too. Now, as far as the other changes, the injured in person on line 24 is, of course, what I said a while ago, that would apply if you only got injured physically or something, whereas this does expand it to include recovery of property damage.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, my question was that on line 21, if it's proper that the word who should be underlined. It doesn't make sense if it is properly underlined.
House, please stand at ease. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I have the statute reference 4505-104 right now, and as it reads, and members can read on the proposed bill to see what word may be left out. Reads right now, it says, a seller's warranty, whether express or implied, extends to a natural person who is in the family or household of his buyer, or who is a guest in his home, if it is reasonable to expect that the person may use, consume, or be affected by the goods, and who is injured in person by breach of the warranty. That's the way it reads right now.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Representative Uriam.
Then Mr. Freeman is right. Who should not be under there?
Representative Parr.
Well, Mr. Speaker, harking back to some discussions yesterday, I would assume that's one of the things revised statutes can do.
Taking care of and engrossing. Is there further discussion? You ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Take a roll call vote. The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Miles? Any other member? Representative Meekins? Might be simpler for the clerk if the members would announce either from yes to no or from no to yes. Representative Byrne? Clerk, please announce final total.
18 yeas, 22 nays.
So amendment number 2 has not been adopted. Does the clerk have further amendments to the committee substitute?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number 3 by Mr. Urien. Page 1, line 26. Add new sections that will read the same as committee substitute for House Bill 137, Judiciary amended.
Representative Urien.
I move and ask unanimous consent to the adoption of the amendment.
There's objection. Representative Urien.
To refresh your memories, those in the body, House Bill 137 was titled an act related to civil penalties for the discharge of oil. It's a bill that passed in this body and has not seen action on the other side. That appears to me that's what the purpose of this that we're going to today is, putting some bills over that need some action. And I think that particular piece of legislation needs to see some action on the other side. And I hope that you will adopt the amendment.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think this is an inappropriate amendment at this time. I think generally what happens between the two bodies is that one body sometimes attaches a bill that's already passed their body and has somehow been lost in the other body, or the other body won't consider it, or fails on the floor, or something has. And I don't think traditionally we have just attached bills for the sake of attaching bills when the other body is especially considering them. And I happen to know in this case that House Bill 137 is in the Senate Resources Committee, and the Senate Resources Committee has been working on this bill. And I think it would be very inappropriate to try to attach this bill when they are considering this bill and working on it. Maybe at some later point when we could consider this issue when it became clear that the bill was being buried or something, but I think it really is probably, attaching at this time would do a real harm to the bill.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to congratulate Mr. Urien. I feel he's a very clever man, and were I the minority leader under these circumstances, I might try the same sort of thing. He's a lot faster at the gun today than he has been on other days, but of course I'm going to vote against the motion.
Is there further discussion? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 3 be adopted? We'll take a roll call vote. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
10 yeas, 30 nays.
So amendment number 3 has not been adopted. Does the clerk have further amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 30 be considered rose, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The clerk, please read House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 30, third reading.
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 30, rules by the Rules Committee, an act relating to civil liability.
Bills before you in third reading. You ready for the question? The question is, shall Senate Bill number 30 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Guy? Representative Swanson? Any other member? Clerk, please announce final total.
26 yeas, 14 nays.
So Senate Bill number 30 has passed the House. Representative Urien? Clerk, please note Representative Urien's notice of reconsideration of his vote on Senate Bill number 30. Representative Miller?
Speaker, may we be at ease?
House, please stand at ease.
Government and insurance system and providing for an effective date. The Committee on State Affairs has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 135 under consideration. Three of the members of the committee recommend it do pass, and the House State Affairs concurs with and adopts the language of the Senate Finance Letter of Intent. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Miles, and Dankworth. Having no recommendation, Kelly. The Committee on Finance has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 135 under consideration, and the members of the and five of the members of the committee recommend it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 135, and that it be reported back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Schaefer, Freeman, Rode, Haugen, and Guy. Signing do pass, Meekins, Buchholz, and Duncan. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute be accepted in the original bill.
There is objection. Representative Anderson.
Could someone explain what that new Section 3 is? The original bill, Section 3, was the effective date. There's been a new Section 3, and Section 4 is now the effective date.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section 3 provides that the organizations, as it states in the bill, very simply, the organizations representing public employees may participate in the state retirement system. For example, the Municipal League and NEA, the employees of the Municipal League and the employees of the NEA are covered by the state retirement system. They are allowed to participate in that system. This would expand it to allow other organizations such as APEA, their employees. Now, they're not state employees, but they're employees of the organization itself. If the organization should adopt a resolution so recommending, allow them to participate in the public employees retirement system.
Speaker. Representative Brown.
Speaker, if I understand the answer correctly, then that this would apply to relatively few people, because I don't think these organizations have very many employees compared to the large numbers of employees that are otherwise in the system. My only question is it felt by the members of the Finance Committee who worked on this that the reference an organization representing public employees is tight enough to make sure that it covers those organizations that are recognized for the purposes of collective bargaining? It seems a rather wide language, and that's why I'm asking the question.
Representative Duncan?
Yes, I believe the language is tight enough. Of course, an organization representing public employees. I mentioned APEA. There's also APSE, Local 71, I guess it is. That's public service employees. That organization also. So I believe it is tight enough.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, could we be at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Before the at ease, we had under consideration a motion to adopt the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 135. Is objection maintained to the adoption of that motion? Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, in fairness to the rest of the members, I've been asked why the recommendation out of the Finance Committee, and I should explain that. There was 3 due passes and 5 no recommendations. And without making an argument for or against, I suspect that probably most of those doubts were brought about by the fact that the director of the retirement system was very adamantly and strongly opposed to the inclusion of this language.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, a short word for those people who might cast their vote on the committee substitute based on the colloquy between myself and Mr. Duncan before the at-ease. I was still concerned that the language in line 25 is too tight, and if the committee substitute is adopted, there is an amendment on the clerk's desk to tighten that up so that it would not end up representing, say, anybody who formed any organization for any purposes which happened to be and consist of public employees of the state.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, maybe one point ought to be brought out a little bit more clearly, too. If an organization representing public employees does opt onto the system, that organization has to pick up the employer share. The state of Alaska would not be picking up the employer share.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The addition of the language did bother me at first, but as it was explained to me during the at-ease, the language is to accommodate something like 20 employees that cannot by themselves fund a retirement program. And I do remove my objection, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further objection to the adoption of the House Committee substitute? Representative Urien?
Mr. Speaker, it appears to me we're setting a dangerous precedent here. The justification is because a small group of people can't buy their own retirement system. There are lots of small groups of people in the state, a lot of small businesses can't afford a retirement system. Maybe we ought to let them all opt into this retirement system. We're now putting people who are non-public employees in the public employee retirement system, PERS. Maybe we ought to give everybody that opportunity.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, I would just like to ask a question of Mr. Duncan with regard to the remarks of Mr. Urien. Is it my understanding that right now some employees of organizations representing public employees are in the PERS and some are not, and this would remove that inequity?
Representative Duncan.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, in reply to both Representative Brown and Representative Urien, the precedent has already been set, of course. As I indicated earlier, employees of the Municipal League are presently participating in the public employee retirement system, and employees of NEA, the National Education Association, are presently participating in the teacher's retirement system. So if there's any precedent, it's already been set. And that's what this does, as Mr. Brown pointed out, removes the inequity.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to remind you, Mr. Speaker, that language of this type, why it does go very far, possibly. I read and I believe that probably the largest and strongest labor organization in the state of Alaska is very much interested in possibly representing state employees. And I would hate to have...
like to add to that, Mr. Gates' opposition. So it's not just anyone who says, I want to be a member of APDA or I want to be a member of Local 71. It's their actual business agents, their staff. Thank you.
they happen to be members of that system. One of the main purposes, or one of the main advantages, I guess you could say, to both the state and to the association or union, is that it would allow a little transferability back and forth. For instance, a job opens up in APA, and it's a research job, and it's a pretty good paying job, and they don't want to bring anybody in from Nebraska or Washington if they can help it. In fact, they'd rather not even bring anybody from outside the organization. They'd rather bring in a former state employee because, you know, that's what it's all about. That's what the organization is all about. This would allow the employee to take this job and continue his same retirement benefit. That's the advantage to the association. Now, the advantage to the state is that the same thing can happen in reverse. It might be that the state might be wanting somebody with some collective bargaining savvy, somebody in the personnel department. They may want somebody in personnel with some negotiating or just personnel matter savvy. The state then could offer them a job and say, look, you're not going to lose any retirement. The same retirement that you picked up while you were a member of APA still carries over. The same thing happens in the municipalities. It's considered a two-way street there, too. We allow the state can take on a public employee from the municipalities, or the municipalities can take on an employee from the state, and they carry with them their rights investments under the PERS system, and that's actually an advantage to both systems.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, a lot of times during the negotiation process, the both sides will say, well, we'd like to have this, but it's not law, and maybe we agree that both sides will work to change the law. I'm curious if this subject has ever come up in negotiations where both sides have said, hey, this looks like a pretty good deal. We'll work to change this law and get our people under the PERS system. Has that ever been done?
Representative Miller.
I would doubt it, Mr. Speaker, in as much as Mr. Gates' testimony is apparently in opposition to the bill, so I doubt it very seriously. But, of course, we consider many, many things on this floor that are not subject for negotiation, and there's nothing wrong with procedure the minority leader just outlined. If the two want to agree to lobby for a certain concept, there's nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, there's certainly there's no obligation on our part to consider only those matters which have been mutually agreed upon as being something that we're going to mutually lobby for.
Mr. Urien.
In Mr. Miller's previous testimony, I think he may have touched on the real reason. I'm curious, has it come about in the various groups APA, etc., represent their public employees. Has it come about that these people who work for the public employees see that they've negotiated such good deals with the employees that is there some jealousy maybe, and they decide maybe they're going to quit working for the organization, go to work for the state, and now but we're trying to keep them working for the organization by giving them some of these benefits?
Representative Miller.
Speaker, no.
Representative Rode.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to just read for the benefit of the body here, Article 12, Section 7 of Article 12 of the Constitution. It's very short, and it reads, membership in employees' retirement systems of the state or its political subdivisions shall constitute a contractual relationship. Accrued benefits of these systems shall not be diminished or impaired. In other words, anyone in this system is guaranteed. It's an absolute guarantee. And I don't know whether the taxpayer should absolutely guarantee the benefits of anybody besides state employees. This is a question.
Representative Brown?
Well, Mr. Speaker, in response to that, if I understand the words that Mr. Rhodes read correctly, and I read that section before, all he's pointing out is that these employees of these groups possibly may not be protected by that constitutional provision the way in which public employees are, since they are not employees of the state. So perhaps another legislature might, as a matter of policy, make a pass a law
taking them out, but while we might not be able to do that with regard to individual public employees who had been vested, but it's nice to have that assurance, but I don't think it affects the current bill before us. Secondly, with regard to Mr. Phillips' question, I don't see how you could have a matter of conflict of interest for somebody working for a public employees organization, since at least it's my understanding that we here make amendments to the public employment retirement system, and that it's not usually or is not supposed to be a subject for collective bargaining. And on one matter, I will strongly differ with the majority leader, whether or not it has been the custom or not to have agreements, oral or otherwise, between sides of public sector collective bargaining about lobbying. At least in my view, it's very improper, and I'm not going to buy that in any case. But I doubt very much if that's the case here. Mr. Speaker, I'm in favor of adopting the committee substitute.
Representative Chatterton.
Mr. Speaker, the majority leader a while ago gave the rationale to where this would be in the best interest of the state by permitting an interchange, and thereby between people representing employees and actual employees. And all that it gives me now, this portion of the bill gives me even greater concern, because it sounds like very much to me, Mr. Speaker, as if we're letting the fox into the hen house. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Nackack.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Retreading water, which has gone downstream already, I wonder if, for my clarification, I could have someone explain on line.
Representative Miller.
I'm not 100% sure if I quite understand the question, but if it's referring to the looseness, so-called, of the term there, an organization representing public employees, I think I agree, in fact, I know I agree 100% with an amendment which will be offered by Representative Brown, which would designate that the organization we're talking about is an organization recognized for purposes of collective bargaining.
Representative Duncan.
I believe, if I understood Representative Nackack's question correctly, he was asking what are the provisions in sections 570 through 650 of the statute. And with my statute before me here, it just provides, the bare working necessities, the effective day of participation, how you designate eligible employees, and agreements to contribute, states how the employees are bound to the system, how contributions are transmitted to the commission or administration, and so on. It's just the basic workings of the public employee retirement system.
Representative Nackack.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just trying to clarify in my mind that that political subdivisions and public organizations, in fact, are organizations on line 25.
Representative Duncan.
Sorry, Mr. Speaker. Can you repeat that question once more? I don't think I caught it.
Representative Nackack.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for stating that on the page which we're dealing with. I'm asking if. Section on page 2, line 1,
17 yeas, 23 nays.
The House Committee 17%, Bill number 135 has not been adopted. Clerk, further amendments to the bill, Representative Higgins.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller. Okay, no objection. Motion is adopted. Clerk, please read Senate Bill number 135 for full reading.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 135 by the Finance Committee. An act relating to participation by employees of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the Public Employees Retirement and Insurance System providing for an effective date.
Senate Bill 135 is before the House for third reading. Further discussion. Representative Farr.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to just make a couple of points.
And Boatman Union, which wasn't mentioned before. I'd like to know, I don't know anything about the North Pacific Fishery Management Council very much, and I don't know why they're studying the case.
Representative Higgins.
House Blue Stand at ease. House, please come back to order. The clerk has a proposed amendment on her desk to Senate Bill number 135. Would the clerk please read the proposed amendment?
Amendment number one by Mr. Meekins. Page one, line 24. Add all of Section 3 with the following amendment. After full-time employees, add, whose primary duties are with public employees. Renumber following section accordingly. He's adding the Section 3 from the House Committee substitute with the following amendment.
Representative.
The following amendment. After full-time employees, add, whose primary duties are with public employees. Renumber the following section accordingly.
So further discussion. Ready for the question. The question is, shall Senate Bill number 135 be returned to second reading for the purpose of adopting amendment number one? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
19 yeas, 19 nays, 2 excused.
So the motion to return to second reading has failed. Are there any further proposed amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Representative Anderson.
How many people are we talking about in this bill, and who is expected to benefit by the passage of this legislation?
Any member may respond. Representative Bradley. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, former Representative Specking testified on this bill in committee, and he said that this council is in kind of a middle area here where they're not eligible to join the federal retirement system. And if they can't join the state retirement system, they're kind of out on their own. And this council is headquartered in Anchorage, and it does, and they are Alaskan residents. They will be with the council for a good many years to come, and I can certainly, based on the testimony of former Representative Specking, support the legislation.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, as I understand it now, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council members are federal employees at this time, and the money that they get comes from the federal government under Public Law 94-265, and that. But the intent of the legislation is to have the council pay the employer's contribution. In other words, the council would attempt to get the federal government to come up with the money to pay the state so that they could participate in the public state public employees' retirement insurance system. But my one question was not answered. Who are these employees? What are their names? Does anybody have any names? Who's going to be the beneficiaries?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I have absolutely no idea. And I'm not trying to be cute here. Who the individuals are? I think they have a director and a couple of secretaries. Possibly somebody who's involved in participated in directly or directly with this council or some member of the body that's a fisherman might know the personal knowledge, but you know, the name. I don't know the individuals. I'm not trying to be cute again, but I'm not sure how germane that is. Representative Specking's name was brought up, and to the best of my knowledge, he's not the benefit of this.
Representative Brown.
I know you allow a great latitude of debate on this floor, but I would not want to base my vote one way or the other on this based on whether it was Sam Jones or Bill Smith working for the North Pacific.
Fishery Management Council, and I think that there's a rule regarding decorum and debate, the discussion of individuals not in this body. I wouldn't want to base a vote on something like that as to who they are.
Representative Parr.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess I understand more about this council than I did before, but one of the points that has been raised is that this is apparently in some ways parallel to the Federal State Land Use Planning Commission. And I wondered if someone who's worked on the bill could tell us if the employees of that commission are participating in the system the same way, are eligible to.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I have no knowledge that the State Federal Land Use Plan is participating in the years for the federal requirements.
Representative Kelly.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I haven't any knowledge, and I can't answer that question either. I think the essential point to remember, though, is that these people, for one reason or another, cannot join the federal retirement system. And they are working, I think, in a capacity that would allow them to be considered public employees, and they are Alaskan residents, and Alaska has a large stake in this North Pacific Fisheries Council, and I would urge the body to support this legislation.
Ready for the question? The question is, shall Senate Bill number 135 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce the final total.
34 yeas, 6 nays.
So Senate Bill number 135 has passed the House. The bill does carry an effective date section. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent to the roll call on committee substitute Senate Bill 135 be considered the roll call and effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, effective date section is adopted on Senate Bill number 135. Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of Senate Bill 135.
Clerk, please note Representative Bradley's notice of reconsideration of his vote on Senate Bill number 135. Clerk, please read the next item on the daily calendar.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 333 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to care for children. The Committee on Judiciary has had committee substitute for House Bill 333 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with second committee substitute for House Bill 333 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, concurred in by Brown, Miles, Dankworth, Eliason, and Gardner. I have one committee substitute on my desk in third reading, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that this body revert to second reading for purposes of adopting a second committee substitute.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. House Bill 333 is returned to second reading. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that this body adopt a second committee substitute for House Bill 333 in lieu of the earlier adopted committee substitute for House Bill 333.
Your objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Representative Miller.
Speaker, unless there are further amendments, we matter the word. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that this body any substitute for House Bill 333 be considered gross, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. The clerk, please read House Bill 333, third reading.
Second committee substitute for House Bill number 333 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to care for children.
House Bill 333 is before the House in third reading. Representative Phillips. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, basically when we went back in, what we did was we added some due process requirements to make sure that nothing was going to be done wrong with regard to the rights of a blood relative. Things like requiring determination by the department be done by clear and convincing evidence
making sure that the determination could be appealed to the Superior Court. Perhaps Mr. Miller, and other who was present, and the other members of the Judiciary Committee can remember the other changes. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, on a personal basis, the most important change was the removal of the word physical on line 2 of page 2, where it previously said that that the custody of the child by the blood relative will result in serious physical or emotional damage. We took out the word serious. At least my own feeling being that word serious denoted a certain degree, and it would just be almost impossible to determine. In other words, if a child were just beat regularly but not hard, that wouldn't be serious, but if the court could get her arm broken, that would be serious. So we just removed that determination and said that it will result in physical or emotional damage. In addition, there was some language at the very beginning of the section on page 1, line 25, removed the word notwithstanding any other provisions of law, because that seemed to be awfully, totally all-encompassing, and as a matter of fact, at some later date, some legislature may want to make some other provision of law, so that language was removed.
Is there further discussion? Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question on page 2, paragraph F. If a blood relative of the child exists and agrees the child should be placed elsewhere, the way I read that is, does that mean the blood relative of the next of kin, like maybe a brother instead of an aunt or an uncle, of that one who's the nearest next of kin, does that mean that person could agree to place the child elsewhere, or does it go on down the chain of relatives? I just wonder what that means.
If I understand Mr. Hayes' question correctly, are you asking, does any blood relative have veto power over the placement of the child? No, I don't think that's true. Although the bill intends to make certain that blood relatives are kept completely in touch with the proceedings, the department still would have the final word. The intent of the legislation is to make certain that blood relatives are kept in complete contact with all the proceedings by the department and do have sufficient input.
Representative Brown.
I think it's important to note that the blood relative we're speaking of is that referred to in page 1, lines 26-27. A blood relative exists who requests custody of the child. This is a situation where here's an individual who, rightly or wrongly, has enough concern, or at least represents that he has enough concern, that he wishes custody of a child. So it's not going to apply in many, or probably most, cases.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill number 333 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
39 yeas, 1 nay.
The House Bill 333 has passed the House. Brings us to the end of today's calendar. Representative Miller.
Speaker, we be at ease.
House, please stand at ease. Representative Miller.
There are several concurrences that we can dispose of. At the present time, we had a message from the Senate indicating they had passed House Bill 341, liability of health care providers, with amendments. I think those were distributed yesterday. Mr. Miles has indicated that that these amendments are consistent with the House position. So at this time, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent. I'll move that this body concur in the Senate amendments, thus adopting House Bill 341 amended by the Senate, and I'll ask the members to vote yes.
Ready for the question? The question is, shall the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 341, providing for liability of health care providers. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
37 yeas, no nays, 3 excused.
So, House has concurred in the Senate amendments to House Bill 341. The clerk will so notify the Senate. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, we have before us the report of the Conference Committee on House Bill 342, amended management of coastal zone resources of the state. The committee in both houses, namely Senators Poland, Meehlin, and Tillian, and Representatives Miles, Nackack, and Kelly, have signed, concurred in the report. So, and that revised edition, I think, has been distributed to all members, Mr. Speaker. I'll therefore ask that this body concur in the report of the Conference Committee, thus adopting a Conference Committee substitute for House Bill 342. I'll ask the members to vote yes.
Representative Meekins. The House Bill 342 is the bill on the management of coastal resources, so-called coastal zone management.